Welcome to the Bounce podcast series, hosted by me, Dr. Catherine Munn. This series is inspired by the original Bounce project at University of Victoria, created by Rebecca Gagan. In our series, McMaster faculty and alumni share stories which could easily have remained untold or secret. These are stories of loss, grief, rejection, relationship difficulties, mental health problems, and more, based on experiences our guests have had when they were students. This podcast series has been developed by our Bounce team, made up of students, staff, and faculty at McMaster, with a grant from the McMaster Okanagan Special Project Fund. The Bounce team are inspired and informed by our own experiences as students and conversations we have had with students, and we are passionate about promoting more open discussion of failure and struggle at McMaster. We envision that Bounce at McMaster can help us to build resilience, individually and collectively, by increasing mutual understanding and creating connections through the sharing of stories. Learn more about the project, our team, and our guests by checking out our website. Good morning and welcome to Bounce. As you know, Bounce is a podcast where we're talking to faculty and alumni about experiences that they may have had as students in the past, and also talking about what we can learn from those and how we can connect better as a community. Today, I have the privilege of speaking to Dr. Tracy Prowse, and I'm going to ask Tracy to introduce herself and tell us a little bit about, with the faculty she works in and the kind of work she does. And then we'll talk with Tracy about some of her experiences as students, hopefully. So welcome, Tracy, and I'm hoping you can introduce yourself to the audience.
Sure. Thanks. Thanks very much for having me. I'm really pleased to be here. So I am an associate professor in the Department of Anthropology at McMaster University, and I've been here since, when did I get to Mac? 2009, but I did my PhD in McMaster, and basically my research is in biological anthropology, so I study the human skeleton and to learn about life in the past, and right now I'm also the associate dean academic for the Faculty of Social Sciences.
Yes. So you're a very busy person within and outside the pandemic. And we're so happy that you've taken the time to talk today. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about perhaps maybe like where your educational journey maybe took you prior to coming to McMaster to do your PhD, and then I guess to come on later as a faculty member at McMaster. Maybe you can give us a sort of maybe just a little snapshot of your undergraduate and master's prior to your PhD, kind of walk us through your journey.
Sure. Yeah, I'm happy to do that. So I'm originally from Alberta. I grew up in Calgary, and I started my university education actually out in British Columbia. So I did my first year at UBC, and like most kids who started out, you sort of did what your parents wanted you to do. And so my dad told me that I should be a doctor. And so I was in pre-med. And then I switched to the University of Alberta. And so my undergraduate degree is in science, in biology and psychology. But while I was doing that undergrad degree, I also really come to kind of an understanding that I really loved anthropology and I really loved learning about the past. And so I finished my Bachelor of Science degree at the University of Alberta, but then took an extra year of courses so that I could apply to the master's degree at the University of Alberta in anthropology. And so I did my MA in anthropology, worked in Egypt on some material from pre-dynastic Egypt. And then when I was finished that, I applied to come to McMaster to do my PhD with Shelley Saunders, who is a biological anthropologist who was here at McMaster.
Oh, fascinating. So how did you, maybe if I can ask, how did you discover anthropology? Did you just happen to take a course when you were in your undergrad, or do you remember what piqued your interest, or how you found that interest?
I think I found it when I was really young, although I didn't really know what it was at the time, because I think what really got me excited about anthropology and archaeology, was learning about King Tut. So it was really Egyptology, and it was sort of National Geographic. And so I was always really fascinated by the past. I just didn't know what that was and how I could actually study it. And so when I started my undergraduate program at the University of Alberta, I took some elective courses, and one of those was an anthropology course. And I think that's when it sort of crystallized to me that I could actually study this as a field. So that's sort of how it happened.
Wow. Yeah. It's always just so interesting to, you found your way into such an interesting niche, as everyone seems to in academia. But how you got there is interesting to hear about, and sounds like a very longstanding childhood passion that developed into your career.
I think so. Yeah. I think it was there for a very long time. It was just sort of figuring out how to make it a career. That was the sort of the journey part of it.
Mm-hmm. So I wanted to sort of take you forward, because I know we have talked a little bit about some of maybe the challenges you experienced later on in school, as we all will really at some point in our university careers or our as students. And I guess I wanted to take you into to talk a little bit about a challenging time in graduate school that you might be comfortable to share with us.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think for me, when I was doing my PhD, so I'd finished my coursework, I'd finished my comprehensive exams, and I was trying to think back kind of chronologically if I'd already done my field work, but it's sort of hard to pinpoint when things actually started to happen. But I guess for me, what I noticed what was happening is that I was in a relationship, and that relationship had ended, and I just didn't seem to be able to kind of get beyond it, and I kind of got stuck. And so, you know, it was just this period of time when I just had never experienced the kind of anxiety and sort of sadness that it just didn't seem to be going away. And I didn't seem to be able to figure out a way to sort of self-cure or self-heal. And so for me, that was really when I realized that I needed to sort of reach out and seek some help from somebody.
So yeah, just so I understand. So you were in your PhD, you were kind of more toward the end of your PhD, having been doing that for a couple of years, and just found yourself sort of struggling with emotions that were more intense or kind of unfamiliar or different than how you'd felt before, I guess.
Yeah, and it seemed to sort of reach out into kind of all aspects of my life. So, you know, up until that point, and as everybody knows, or a lot of people know, you know, doing grad work is really hard, and it's a challenging time. And there's always moments when you're not really sure of yourself, but usually those are intermittent, or they're sort of periodic. And I just found that I was in a space where I couldn't get beyond just feeling, you know, those feelings that some of us have, that, you know, feeling like I didn't belong there and that I was a fraud. And so, you know, every time I would go in and speak to my advisor, it was really emotional, and I couldn't sort of figure it out on my own. And I just really, it just lasted long enough that it became a problem for me that I realized I needed to get some help.
And I mean, in a sense, did you have an understanding or any ideas at the time as to why it was happening at that time? Like why now is this happening to me? Or did it feel really puzzling as to why it was happening at the time?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm not sure. I mean, I think that I knew that, you know, doing a PhD was really challenging. And I also knew that I knew enough about myself to recognize that, you know, I had to fight against my own insecurities to believe that I belonged there and that I was smart enough to be there. But I think just the combination of that plus the sort of breakup and all of the pieces, I think just culminated together at that moment to kind of to to kind of trigger this really extreme response that I'd never actually felt before for that kind of duration of time. I think that was what was really striking to me, is that it just didn't seem to ease at all after a while.
Yes, because I think many of the things you're talking about are things that many people could appreciate or have experienced. And I imagine, like, you know, having been through so much schooling and all the way through and into a PhD, master's, and then a PhD, some of these thoughts and feelings would be familiar, but it sounds like it was just, they were just more intense and they were more difficult, and the feelings weren't going away, that led you to think, you know, there's something different about how I'm feeling now compared to, you know, how I've moved through these times before.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, when I was finishing up my master's, you know, it was stressful, and I remember working really hard and kind of being concerned and, you know, and hoping that it was good enough, but that was just a moment in time, right? And that once I defended my master's and once I was finished, then that kind of eased. And to me, that felt like a kind of normal reaction to that particular stressful moment. Whereas what I was experiencing when I was in my PhD just seemed like my emotional responses to what was happening were way above, way beyond what I think the situation probably warranted if I'd been in a better kind of healthier state, I think.
And are you comfortable to describe at all, like what you were feeling? What were some of those feelings like?
Yeah, I would say it was a lot of anxiety. So just anxiousness about everything. So everything that I had to do just generated anxiety. A lot of sadness, a great deal of sadness, and just, as I said, kind of relentless. I think that was the piece for me that was so striking, was that it wasn't, you know, the sadness couldn't be tied to a specific thing. It was just sort of there, present all the time. And so it just felt like, I know this is a sort of an old tired expression, but kind of walking on eggshells. So I was always just walking, expecting that even a small thing would kind of set me off or, you know, make me even sadder or more anxious. Like, it was just really hard to kind of function.
Mm-hmm. You just couldn't trust your own emotions and your own self as you'd come to know yourself in different situations, to know that you'd be able to manage those or to feel comfortable.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, what did you do sort of when you kind of, I mean, I know it's probably not just one moment, it's sort of over a period of time. It sounds like you sort of realized this is something different is going on here. And so what did you decide to do?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, again, it's all kind of compressed because it was long ago. So we're talking probably 2000 and, or no, not even 2000. It would be 1998 ish probably. So, I mean, I think that, you know, the first thing I did is I talked to my friends and tried to get some perspective. And of course, they cared and were very supportive. And I talked to my advisor, who, again, was also just a wonderful, supportive person. But at a certain point, I realized that those things weren't enough and it wasn't really helping me get through. And so I spoke to my doctor and got a referral and started seeing a psychiatrist on a regular basis, and also started taking medication for anxiety and depression. And I think for me, those two things, both the medication and seeing a professional and being able to sort of talk about what was causing all of this emotional response in me, that's when things really started to change for the better.
So I guess listening to you talk about, you know, the courage that it would take to share your experiences and how you were feeling with your friends, but also with your supervisor first, I guess I'm wondering what went into that decision to actually talk to your PhD supervisor and to share how you were feeling with her.
I don't know that there was a decision. I think it really was that she knew that something was wrong. And I think that she could sense that I was struggling. And I think for me, I knew that I could trust her to to tell her how I was feeling. And again, at that time, I'm not even sure I could really articulate well why I was feeling that way, just that I was feeling that way. So I think for me, it was about being able to trust her, to listen and to care enough to sort of hear what, you know, why I was feeling the way I was feeling.
Mm-hmm. So you had enough, you had known her for some time, had a relationship with her sort of as your supervisor, and sounds like had come to trust that she would be someone that she was someone that cared about you and could maybe help guide you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So very fortunate that you had that kind of supervisor that you were able to talk to. And how did she, do you remember sort of how she reacted or the kind of things she said that were helpful at that time?
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's hard. I mean, I think she just listened. I don't know that, you know, she, I don't remember very specifically what she said, but I think just the fact that she was willing to listen to me, to sort of hear, you know, what I was going through, and just to be there and be present as a support, I think was really helpful and important. And particularly because, you know, my family was out west, and obviously I had a very good and very strong cohort of friends and peers who were doing the PhD program with me at the time, but I didn't have family here. And so leaning on my friends and leaning on Shelley, my advisor, was really important, and it was really key for me.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, so it was that sort of community of people around you in the kind of in your academic world that were really the first people that kind of noticed and knew and that you felt comfortable to talk to. And then it sounds like you also decided to seek kind of professional help through your doctor and then eventually through a referral to psychiatry.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And again, I think for me, that was critical in getting and feeling better was the professional help that I got.
And was that a suggestion that someone made to you, or do you just kind of had a good relationship with your family doctor at the time and just kind of knew that was the person to go to? Or do you remember at all how you decided to do that?
I think it was just figuring out, as I said, that I just thought I could kind of manage this on my own, and it became really apparent that I couldn't. And again, not because I was doing anything particularly self-destructive, or it just didn't seem to be getting better on its own. And mm-hmm. So I think it was just me talking to my doctor. And again, I wasn't, you know, my family doctor was someone I kind of knew when I got here to Ontario. So it wasn't somebody who I'd, you know, had a long relationship with and just described what I was going through. And the doctor just happened to know of someone, a psychiatrist in the area that was taking patients. And she just referred me to that doctor. And so I think it was just mm-hmm. kind of a natural, you know, outcome of meeting with the doctor, describing what I was going through, and she made the recommendation. So I said, yes. Yeah.
And so what, like looking back up at that time and seeing the psychiatrist and some of the things you sort of may have done, and you talked about talking with her and also taking medication eventually, what was helpful about seeing the psychiatrist and taking those steps? So what helped you with that?
Well, a whole bunch of things. I think what seeing the psychiatrist helped me understand was where the emotions were coming from, because I think what was so difficult for me to understand was why I was feeling that way and why I was reacting so strongly to, you know, the kind of current situation I was in. So she really helped me understand, I think, the source of those emotions, which of course, after a lot of therapy, I've come to realize come from my kind of my past and my history. So I think doing that was really important. I think being able to talk to somebody objectively, and although friends and family are a huge support, sometimes it's really hard for them to be objective, right? Because they care so much about you and they want the best for you that their perspective is impacted by that. So having somebody objectively listen, and I think just being able to get whatever was in my head out and sort of examine it with the assistance of somebody was just so critical for me. Because if it stayed inside my brain, and I'm sure people have heard of this, I call it kind of the kind of hamster wheel thing where it just sits mm-hmm. and spins and it doesn't go anywhere. But being able to sort of talk it through with somebody and kind of examine it. And again, being an academic, sort of hyper focus and trying to figure something out was just really, really helpful. And so that was an important piece, as was the recommendation to take the medication, because I think a lot of people before they go on medication somehow think that the medication will stop you from feeling what you're feeling. It will, you know, it will somehow sort of interfere. And I think the most profound thing that I learned from my psychiatrist was that the medication, in fact, helps because it takes the edge off the emotions. You still feel what you're going to feel. They're just not so overwhelming. And for me, that was just a big shift in thinking about what that could do. And as it turns out, she was absolutely right. It did. It helped me understand where my emotions were coming from, why I was feeling this way, and actually helped me work through them. And so it was the combination of both the kind of talk therapy and the medication that helped.
Yes. So I think you're speaking to a lot of folks' fear, I think, with medication that it will just sort of, it's just sort of covering up the problem or not really addressing the problem. But what you're saying is that it actually, you know, it helped you feel not so overwhelmed by the feelings you were having. And it sounds like also helped you then to be able to talk about the issues, or I don't know if it was the medication that helped, but the combination of having the medication and kind of having the person to be able to talk to and kind of process and problem solve through some of the issues, it was that combination that was helpful.
100%. Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly right. Yeah. It just helped to be able to think about those things and talk about those things without the feelings just overwhelming me, which was really, really helpful.
And I mean, are you comfortable to speak at all to some of the things you discovered about yourself in that kind of process? Like in understanding, you know, that obviously things like depression have biological underpinnings and genetic contributions, but they also have, you know, social and psychological contributions to them as well. And I guess I'm wondering, sort of, did you for yourself figure out over time what were some of the kind of triggers or some of the contributors to depression and anxiety for you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think what I learned through my therapy, and I went, you know, I was in therapy for a number of years. So I just, you know, just to be clear to people, this wasn't a short-term process for me. And I think for some people it might be, and you might just need a little bit of time with someone. Other times you need longer. And so I did do therapy for years and years. And I think what I learned is to understand my past a bit better, and just to kind of briefly describe it. I'm an only child, and my parents divorced when I was very young, and I grew up with my mother. And I knew growing up, my mother she had a lot of mental health problems, and she had problems with alcohol. And so my childhood was quite fraught, and it was especially fraught when she would unexpectedly be gone because of her mental health issues. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, what happened was, as I got older, you know, I think I could cope with those a little bit better. But unfortunately, when I was in my late teens, my mother was diagnosed with breast cancer. And then when I was 23, she died of breast cancer. And so I think with the help of therapy, I could kind of understand and tease apart that part of what I was feeling during my PhD was actually embedded or grew out of what I experienced as a young child and as a teenager and losing my mother. And so that, I think, was just the part that was just so profound for me, was understanding, and again, not with blame or anything like that. It was just an understanding of how all of those pieces of my past impacted and showed me what my triggers were. So those triggers of loss and abandonment and feeling like those are such powerful things for me. And so that was what was really, really important about the therapy that I undertook.
Yes. So you had experienced, you know, a lot of loss, it sounds like, and also some traumatic experiences growing up in your family with your mom because of maybe some of the issues for her.
Yep.
But sort of, I guess it strikes me that it's sort of perhaps surprising that you hadn't struggled more earlier, in the sense, like you describe sort of this, I think this time in your PhD as being sort of like different than anything you'd felt before, even though you'd experienced a whole lot of loss and difficult circumstances with your mother's situation and the death of your mother, but somehow it hadn't hit home, I guess, the way it did in your PhD. Is that right to say, or was it something, it just strikes me that that you were wrestling with these things so far after they had occurred.
Yeah, I think that was what was so surprising for me as well, was because when my mom died, I took a year off from school, and I thought I had grieved, and I did, for sure. But I think I hadn't fully grieved. And so I think, as soon as I was, after the year that I took off, I went right into a master's program, and I kind of carried on with, my education. And I think there were moments in there where there was, sadness and mm-hmm. beginnings and endings of relationships. But it didn't, the feelings that I had during my PhD, I don't remember feeling that strongly at an earlier point. And I think part of it was that I really hadn't fully processed ever what I'd gone through with my mother or her death. And for whatever reason, which is still a bit of a mystery, it all kind of came to a head in my PhD. Mm-hmm. That's when everything sort of came together. In not a great way, but in a sort of impactful way.
Yes, because you'd experienced so much before, but somehow it was sort of at this time where it really really came to roost, I guess. But also it was also a time when you were able to move to address it, I guess, in a new and different way by sort of seeking that kind of professional help.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I guess just in thinking about, some of the experiences you've had, and now being a faculty member, a professor and supervising and teaching students yourself, I guess I'm wondering what are the kinds of things that you would hope that that students would realize now, or what they could even sort of learn from what you're sharing here in your story?
Sure. I mean, I think everybody has a unique way of handling the situation. So I think all I can say for me is that the ability to speak about what I was going through was really important. And I think if there are friends, or if there are family, it may not be your supervisor. I mean, I think that was a special relationship that I had with my advisor. And so I think you have to kind of gauge who you feel you can trust. And so I think that for me was really important. So it was being able to talk about and tell people how I was feeling. And again, like I said, my friends, I think, tried and were hugely supportive, as was my family, but from far away. So I just think for me, the most important thing was kind of reaching out and trying to get help and recognizing that, as best as I maybe had been able to do it in the past, I just couldn't kind of do this on my own this time and really needed to get some help. And I think that was the most important thing, was actually reaching out and asking for help, which is hard.
Yes, I think it is really hard. And I think, maybe harder for some than it is for others, and reaching out to certain people and certain types of help, maybe harder, depending on how people feel about how okay it is, I guess, to seek out help. I guess I wonder, you sound now as though it feels like, the way you're talking, it sort of sounds like, well, yes, then I saw my doctor and then I saw a psychiatrist. And so it sounds like that's no big deal in a sense, in the way you talk about it now. But I wonder if it felt that way then. Did you always feel like, did that always feel okay for you to do? Or was it hard to get to that place where it felt okay to kind of reach out for help around emotions or mental health issues?
That's a great question. Yeah. I mean, I guess one of the things I have been told is that when I do talk about very emotional things, I get very matter of fact. So I may make it sound very easy, but I think that's actually kind of a bit of an emotional protection, on my part. So no, it wasn't easy. And as I said, I really struggled with it, right? Because I really thought, here I am, I wasn't a young person in my PhD. I was sort of late 20s, early 30s, thought I could kind of handle this, right? And manage it. And, I'd done hard things before. I'd been through relationships before and breakups. So none of it felt new or different. And I think that was the part that was so puzzling, was why was I having this just extreme reaction to it? So, it was really challenging to kind of come to that decision that I needed help. So it wasn't easy. Mm-hmm. And I think I probably struggled with it for a while, and thought, okay, well, maybe if I just meditate, or maybe if I trying to do some of the sort of self-help things. So I can't remember the beginning of the question, but I think it, it wasn't an easy decision, but yeah, I think it was the right decision. But it took a bit of time for me to get there. And I don't think it took me convincing. I think the medication part was always the part that took me the most convincing. I don't know that the therapy part, I thought that just made sense. But for me, it was the medication that took a little bit for me to accept that was something that I needed to do.
Mm-hmm. And so now, I guess, in your life at this point, looking back on kind of where you were at that point and where you are now, how do things feel now for you?
I think what I think now and what I feel now is that I, at least now, I can recognize my sensitivities, the areas where I know that I have to kind of make sure I'm taking care of myself and make sure that, I'm watching out and just making sure that I'm in a good place and not necessarily happy. I don't, there's no expectation that we always have to be happy, but just that I recognize that I probably will always have a susceptibility or a potential that depression and anxiety might recur. And that's okay. That's not, that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just one of my personality characteristics that I live with, and that I don't want to use terms like cope with or manage, because I don't actually think it's that kind of a thing. I think I know much more about myself, and I can understand and sort of see a bit easier now when I'm kind of triggered, and I can kind of recognize it's like, oh, okay, this is going and I'm having this reaction. So, but I know kind of where that comes from, and that helps a little bit, I think.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like you still see this, some of these emotions or feelings or issues, as things you still at times could struggle with, but you have so much more of an understanding of yourself and also what helps you and what you need to do when you feel those things, or what you know, how you need to self help yourself and what kind of help you need to seek out, that you feel sort of much, much more able to kind of do so, to manage, and not to use those words either, but to kind of, you feel more equipped than you did way back then, kind of deal with these emotions and difficulties when they emerge.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And again, you know, if I felt like I was in a space where I just wasn't, you know, dealing with things in a way that I knew I could, I would happily go back and do more therapy, right? You know, because I know that these are the things that work really well for me, and that, you know, the medication and the therapy were things that really, really helped me. And that if I'm feeling that way again, that I would, without a moment's hesitation, do that again, right? And yeah, it's almost like having a much larger toolkit to recognize and to cope with and to deal with those emotions or those feelings when they come.
Mm-hmm. And so I guess just sort of thinking about, probably we have to come to a close to our conversation in a minute or two, but just thinking about, what are, I guess, some of the things that you would hope, say, students could learn from sort of listening to your experience or thinking about these issues? What might you hope people could take away from it, from our conversation?
That's great. I mean, I hope that people can take away the idea that there is no, you know, at least on my part, there's no judgment about, you know, struggling with mental health issues, and that a lot of people have these mental health issues, and that, you know, there are things that you can do to help yourself. And I think it's up to each individual to decide what those things are, but that, you know, I hope my students, and obviously now I have my own grad students and they have their struggles, that they feel that they can trust me and talk to me, and also that they know that they can reach out and get help when they need help. And mm-hmm. and that's the most important thing. I don't want anybody to have to sort of sit with this and not get the help that they need in whatever form feels appropriate for them.
Yes, and I think that comes through just so clearly talking to you about, you know, how important it has been and maybe continues to be or will be to kind of have those people you can talk to about these issues that you know you can go to and can rely on. Or that there might be actually even other people that, you know, with different kinds of problems, there might be different people that might be helpful, to know that there are people out there that can help and want to help, like you, but also like other professionals and folks if needed that can help too. So I think that comes across very, very clearly today. And I so appreciate your honesty and your willingness to share your story as a student and going forward with us, because I think it's incredibly helpful to others to hear this. And thank you so much for your courage in having this conversation and for talking to me today.
Well, thanks very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to this Bounce podcast. We hope that you have been taken on a bit of a journey by listening to the podcast and hearing the story and perspectives shared. We would love to hear more of your reactions to and reflections on our story if you wish to share them with us at bounce@mcmaster.ca. You can also check out our website, which is linked on the podcast description, and our social media on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Thank you so much.